You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 5th of July. We still sit and wait on Kawhi and its impact. The market tells us that the story I told the other day might even be more remarkable for Utah, and some quick summer league thoughts on the young kids. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, lots of geeky numbers, and hopefully improving your experience being a fan during the off season. You can get the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Himalaya, Stitcher, Spotify, and we're there for you each and every day. Obviously, we're sitting around waiting for Kawhi, and that has enormous impact. From every indication, there are one of three places he's heading. The Lakers to build a new super team. The Clippers to build a really, really good team, or staying in Toronto and opening the door for what would be an unbelievably wacky Western Conference coming up the next year. A few thoughts on that. One is on the Jazz improvement, and I think it'll be interesting when we run the numbers on it. The Jazz are going to be better, I think. That's the feeling, and they definitely will be better offensively. But I don't think when all the numbers are run and the emotion is taken out of it that it's going to be some massive jump to Netherlands. In fact, I think in some of these cases, I suspect that the win total will be, 52, 53, 54 when the projections come out. And I think the Western Conference is going to be a kind of mismatch of that Denver at 53-54. Portland, its team is different. I'll have to digest them at 53-54. Houston at 53-54. And then the next tier at 50-52 or 51. And then the next tier at 48-49. And so if one thing goes a little bit better for one team than you anticipate, or it goes a little worse, or there's an injury, I think these things will all flip around. In other words, Utah got, I think, considerably better and really are going to be able to score. And if Rudy Gobert wins Defensive Player of the Year again and the team has defensively gotten to that level and stays as a top five defensive team, then maybe we do go up to 55, 56, 57 in some crazy. And that's incredibly difficult to do. But if I don't expect that, and I think that's the one thing I feel like, is out there, and maybe I think fans are going to be surprised when we get to the point where Kevin Pelton puts out his numbers projections and some other people put out some non-emotion-based projections. We lost stuff too. And I think that that's kind of important to remember is that, we lost stuff as well. And anyway, I wanted to throw that out there. I just feel like I was talking to David James. He's like, do you think we're at 60? I was like, oh, gosh, and maybe I'll turn out to be, non-optimistic or not optimistic enough. The thing that's interesting to me about the Kawhi circumstance is the NBA has built their new collective bargaining agreement that we're under right now really with an intention of at post LeBron to some extent to avoid the super team and maybe even some of the contracts are so big you can't build around it. If Kawhi goes to the Raptors or even the Clippers, there may not be a 60-win team in the NBA. And I think that's what the NBA wants. I don't know whether I think that's actually the best thing for the NBA. It's probably the most fun for every fan base. For the NBA as a whole, which is largely driven on NBA Finals TV ratings or playoff TV ratings, having a super team usually drives to better ratings and has people you know, more people tune in. So I think that it's an interesting discussion. But if you go back to when the NBA did this collective bargaining agreement and then they had the salary cap bubble, had they not had that salary cap bubble and then the union not being willing to spread it out over multiple years, they might have achieved it anyway, because then there wouldn't have been the spot for Durant to go to Golden State. And while Golden State would have been better than everyone else still, seemingly, you wouldn't have had the Durant-led Warrior super team for 3 years. So it's interesting to watch this, because it's as though the league has come very, very close to being able to get it done. And then Kawhi goes to the Lakers and we have a dominant super team that everyone is shooting for. They will have a incredible lack of depth. I don't think it'd matter. I think if you put, you know, three of the top eight players together on one team, unless they put the same group they had last year of Lance Stevenson, Rajon Rondo, and all of that together, I don't really think it matters. From a points gain standpoint, it I think would just be, you know, I just think it'd be too much. Maybe not. I don't know. No, you have Kawhi at 2.0. Anthony Davis did not have a great year last year at 1.6. And then LeBron is not quite as efficient as he once was, but is still, still in this group of, and would probably become more efficient if he didn't have to carry the load. He's at 1.3. It's not as offensively dominant, frankly, as Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, and Klay Thompson, and it's not as offensively dominant as LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh, all in their prime. But that's pretty daunting. You remember, you know, the way points gained works, there's only usually two or three guys that are above three. Last year there were three, and there's usually only 10 guys above two. So to try to catch a team that would have Kawhi at 2.0 and LeBron at 1.3 and Anthony Davis at 1.6 and the three of them combined are 5.0 becomes virtually impossible. Not completely. And not as much so as the other teams, but it would be awfully tough. So it's interesting what the impact of this is that the league may finally get its evened out, settled team. And we'll see whether that's good for the league. I mean, I think that's the next question, is whether if he goes to these other places, is it good for the league? There's no question though here. As we sit here waiting on Kawhi, you know, for all the offseason moves of Houston, who, you know, we just have forgotten, by the way, and just should not be forgotten, and all the offseason moves of the Jazz and Denver and Portland, you know, this is the move that impacts those four franchises the most. You know, if, you know, all the brilliance gets somewhat irrelevant, I think, if those moves are made. All right, let's talk about how the market actually looks a little differently than it was when I talked to you on Wednesday, and how the Jeff Green and Emmanuel Mudiay signings look a little different as we continue. 4th of July, celebrating your freedom of interest at Murdoch Hyundai during the 4th of July sales event. And now we're going to be moving into the fun Days of 47 group. Fun things going on the entire month of July at all Murdochs. You receive $500 Visa gift card when you finance your Murdoch vehicle through Golden West Credit Union. 0% APR for 60 months at Hyundai's award-winning SUVs. The Kona, the Tucson, the Santa Fe, and the 2019 Elantra is starting at $13,990. The SUV lineup is just great. That Kona is the young, zippy, fast. It's the Subaru Crosstrek. Everyone kind of thinks of that as the, they hit the market first with it. Go take a look at the Kona if you're looking at the Subaru Crosstrek. It's a similar car with a little bit more features, usually a little less price. Great colors. Super, super car. I was actually talking to a buddy who I'm going to spend some time with today. Yesterday, his daughter go look at that. That's quite a deal. The Tucson, and then I'm driving the latest Santa Fe with the safety features are just amazing. Hyundai's technology is just really world-class, leaders in the game at what they do. And, Go check it out. See what you get. Go down to Hyundai if you're looking for a car right now. If Hyundai's not on your list, add it to the list and just stop by. See Jason at Murdoch at 4646. See Blake down in Linden. Head up to Logan and see the guys for a second and see and just make sure that you can't get a lot more value at Murdoch Hyundai. All right, so I did the whole show the other day on that the incredible thing that's happened to Utah is that there's these signings that are taking place and all of the and that these guys are actually coming to Utah when it's possible that they could have gotten the same money somewhere else. And we've never had that before. I actually think I was wrong. I think these guys are coming to Utah and maybe could get more money somewhere else. Ed Davis is interesting. He probably could have gotten more. He's got the 2-year $10 million. That's kind of that going rate. But, and maybe Emmanuel Mudiay really just didn't have a market. And so they decide, you know, they called and see the Jazz development and want to get involved in it. But if you look at Emmanuel Mudiay, some of the players that I was interested in other than Emmanuel Mudiay were Ryan Arcidiacono. He signed a 3-year, $9 million deal in Chicago as a restricted free agent. So that's really a bigger deal than that. That's, you know, we're giving you 3-year, $9 million, even though you don't have a marketplace. But if he's on the open market, or if someone had to offer him a contract that the Bulls weren't going to match, you're probably at about a 3-year, $10 million, $12 million, $14 million. TJ McConnell, who was interested in Philadelphia, plays hard, really limited, but interesting, gets a 2-year, $7 million deal from Indiana. Emmanuel Mudiay's deal with the Jazz is the minimum. It's the same deal Howell Neto actually signed in Philadelphia. Happy for Howell that he got that done and got a place, and it sounds like it's fully guaranteed, which is great. So congratulations to Howell, and hopefully he can stay healthy. And then I think if he does, then he can really have an impact and be a solid backup, filling that TJ McConnell role. The next one was the Jazz signed Jeff Green for the minimum. The guy that I was interested in instead of Jeff Green was Darius Miller out of New Orleans. He signed a 2-year, $14.25 million. $14.25 million. Jeff Green signed a 1-year, $2.5 million deal. Jared Dudley signed a 1-year, $2.6 million similar deal in LA. I would rather have Jeff Green. And so, actually, some of these signings that the Jazz have, to me, almost look better than they did when we talked on Wednesday. Because the alternative plays that I would have been interested in Utah getting weren't actually alternative plays. You know, they weren't opportunity. Sorry.
Infinity Home. Disarm the system.
All right, go away. There we go. I was trying to look up and see if there were any other signings that I can't think of. There's something that took place that I'm forgetting, but you know, Quinn Cook, who's not really a point guard, probably could have been an opportunity after the Warriors rescinded his option. That's what I was looking up to see what had happened on that. But otherwise, you know, a 2-year, $14.25 million deal for Darius Miller, like that's just a different game than signing, you know, when you only have minimum contracts. So the fact that the Jazz, to me, the biggest story for the Jazz offseason is as much of the fact that they got, that when they went and got Mike Conley, the world, according to reports, the world changed in how people view who the Jazz are. And to me, that's what jumps out more than anything else. Because then suddenly players were willing, one, were willing to come to Utah. Two, weren't just coming to Utah as a last resort when they didn't have any other deal. These late signings, I do think, are interesting. There's a really big deal if you can get $5 million of value out of $2 million of contract. So I actually think if you look at the numbers, and I've read this from people that I generally respect, that if you look at the numbers on Bojan Bogdanovic, it's hard to say he's going to give you that value. It's actually not a number that he probably reaches. And so maybe the Jazz, to some extent, overpaid a tiny bit to get that deal and to get that player. And that is absolutely what you have to do to get elite-level talent. And that's fine. The key, then, is if you've overpaid a little bit for that guy, are you capable of making the next step, which is going and getting players who, if you've overplayed, paid Bojan for $3 or $4 million, can you make it up because your $2 million guy gives you six, because your $1 million guy gives you four? And that's the key to this whole thing, that Royce O'Neal will continue to give you more value. Donovan, we talk about it all the time, with Donovan Mitchell's contract, you're able to go do, you know, overpay someone else, frankly, to be able to, and therefore, you know, have an elite level team. And I don't know that the Jazz highly overpaid. I think everywhere I've read feels like they paid a little bit more than what you'd expect on value from Bojan at 30 years old. Like, you begin to diminish your performance here a little bit at this age. So the Jazz will be overpaying Conley and overpaying Bojan, and then Bogdanovich, and then you have to find from there, where are you making your money back, right? Does that make sense? I think that's a key good one to think about and remember when you look at this. But my point is that these two signings, particularly that of Jeff Green and of Emmanuel Mudiay, to me are actually even better as the market continues to develop. Speaking of the market, DeMarcus Cousins is really interesting. I mean, just no deal. He did not look good physically, but no deal. There's some talk of him possibly heading to Washington, which is interesting, but there does not seem to be a big deal available for him, or even right now any deal available for him. Someone's gonna give him a deal. Somebody will start to get the thought of that he might be good again, and make that deal. Finally, we'll talk about Summer League and what we've seen out of that. Today's show brought to you in part by our friends over at Iron Gate Global Advisors. Spencer Nelson stops by to tell us a little bit about the guys he works with and the setup over at Iron Gate Global Advisors. Iron Gate Global Advisors is a Salt Lake financial group that's got a unique combination of talent. Spencer Nelson, former Utah State Aggie, is now working with him. That's how I found out about him. It's probably worth noting, Spencer's not just a hoop guy. He's got an MBA, accounting and finance degrees, worked in private equity, worked in Wall Street. Super smart dude. Anyway, got two guys leading this crew. Brian, who's a former Utah State guy, longtime investment management. He's the chief investment officer. And then there's Brett, who Spencer tells us about.
Brett has a very cool background, which includes an opportunity he had to work with an option shop in Chicago named Thinkorswim, which is a very well-known options trading shop in the options world. He brings that unique skill set to Iron Gate, which adds another component to Brian's active management and being able to use options as an asset class to provide protection in down markets and generate income when markets are doing well or flat. Being able to combine myself and Brett and Brian's background and skill sets provides kind of a perfect marriage that really differentiates Iron Gate Global Advisors and provides real value to our clients.
Find out more about Iron Gate by calling Spencer at 888-591-0334. That's 888-591-0334. Or email Spencer at Spencer@IGGA.com. That's Spencer@IGGA.com. Anytime we're talking investing, please understand that past performance isn't indicative of future results. Also, options may not be for everyone. They have different risks. Make sure you consult a professional before doing anything with them. Do your due diligence. Summer League Vegas kicks in today and gets going for everyone. Should be a lot of fun. Always is down there. It is certainly kind of the mecca of the NBA Summer League. We finished our Summer League. Congratulations to the Utah Jazz. And Salt Lake Summer League was terrific. Great crowds. Incredible dedication. I thought the crowds were the most impressive this year of any year I've been there, in the sense that we really didn't have a player in the marquee high-level players. Garland and Ja Morant weren't playing. And so the fact that we still had 30,000 people show up for 2 days, 3 days, to me is remarkable. And a real tribute to the fan base, and then the Jonathan Reinhart and the crew that put together an amazingly well-run event. And it's got, these little things, by the way, like Salt Lake Summer League, are the things that are being used to change the perception of Salt Lake, change the perception of playing here, change these are the things that the organization is doing, where they're maybe losing money on that event in order to, let all these young kids touch this place. Let them tell someone. Let the, sign the Trevor Bookers and have them have a great experience, and have them, tell an Ed Davis that it's an okay place to be. These are the things, that the subtle things. The Jazz bring in 8 million guys for free agency that when they don't have a job in the league, so that, for like free agent camps, not like big time free agency, like the guys looking for gigs, how you found Royce O'Neal. And a lot of that is just let them come and see the facility and touch the organization and leave with a positive experience. And maybe they'll tell someone, right? These guys are all played together somewhere along the way and got along. Let's talk about a few things on Summer League. So we have the 3 second round draft picks. Let's make sure we understand that, basically, if you look over the last, since 2006, and you take picks 50 through 60, which is 11 picks a year, maybe one guy a year in 50 to 60 in the draft ever plays 100 NBA games, right? Not like has a massive career, plays 100 NBA games. And then, we're talking about Monte Morris in Denver. George Niang is going to get it done. Nader in Boston, you've probably never heard of. James Ennis, Lorenzo Brown, Joffrey Laverne, Robert Sacre, Etuan Moore, pretty good player. That's high level. Isaiah Thomas, the highest level. Jeremy Evans, pretty limited role ever. Patty Mills, A.J. Price, Darnell Jackson, Ramon Sessions, and Ryan Hollins. Okay, so those are not really. Monte Morris is really good. Etuan Moore is really good. Isaiah Thomas is really good. George Niang's hopefully going to be able to be something. Ramon Sessions had a great career. So you're really talking about 4 guys. Now, interestingly, they're all little guards. There is something to drafting that guard in that spot. That does seem to be where the success rate is. Morris, Moore is a mid-range player. Isaiah Thomas, little guard. Patty Mills, little guard. A.J. Price, little guard. Ramon Sessions, little guard. So there's something maybe to how you're drafting in there, what position can be successful. Justin Wright Foreman did not play in Game 3. He looked, I keep just saying he's little. Well, maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe that's actually to his benefit. Or that's the script. He's super quick. He likes that pull-up mid-range step back off a non-pass possession, which is just not something I love in the NBA, and I think would be a hard way to live, but maybe not. Maybe this kid's going to be all right. I think the Jazz will, one of these kids is going to make the roster, and 2 of them are going to make 2-way contracts would be my guess. Jarrell Brantley, to me, was super impressive against San Antonio in Game 3. He played 27 minutes. He had 16 points. He ended up only shooting 6 of 14. I think I'm being lured in by highlights, and I got to be careful of that. But he showed big-time NBA athleticism on 2 drives to the basket where he exploded off 1 foot and went, and is so strong and powerful at his size that it seemed that, to me, was NBA. He made NBA player plays. in game three of, I thought in game one, his greatest strength was frankly that you felt him, that you were aware of his presence and that you felt that he was around. And I actually mean that. It wasn't always good, but I do think, you know, one sign of young players is, are they having an impact on the game? Oni was the opposite in game one. He was completely absent of having any impact at all. And while Brantley stole all the highlights, Oni's game on game three was one that probably was 17 points, 6 rebounds, 2 assists, 2 steals, and a block. Plus, had the matchup on Lonnie Walker late when Lonnie Walker got going and somewhat made Lonnie Walker start to miss. That might have actually been a more impressive performance from, I'd have to talk to the coaching staff. It didn't exude the incredible athleticism. He hit a really tough 3 left side step back coming off a pick and roll, which he read in a unique way and stepped back and hit it. He went 4 of 8 from 3. He only went 1 of 4 otherwise. But he actually had a pretty good game. And what jumped out to me there is that he was so absent in game one. He had no impact at all. And he looked like he was just thinking and nervous. And, you know, the sample size we have in these guys is so small that really making big evaluation points, I think, is a problem. What you want to see is them having impact. So Brantley, to me, showed these NBA athletic skills, elite level NBA skills, not just like sort of NBA skills. Like most players in the NBA might not be able to do what Brantley did on that left-hand drive coming off 1 foot and dunking in traffic the way he did. That matters. Brantley's ability to play with the ball in his hands, he showed all sorts of stuff. He showed a 3, he showed a step back 3. I can't tell what rate that would really go in. But if it's 35, 34%, that's fine. This is the next generation of players who just, you know, they shoot it. They know how. They understand the value of it. And then you saw him rebound and be able to take it down. The one thing I really liked is in game one when I watched Brantley, when he went one-on-one, the minute something went wrong, he just turned his back on his defender and just powered in for a jump hook or an inefficient shot, except for the fact that in the minute you turn your back, you can't see the rest of the floor. And he didn't do that in the next game. He stayed straight up. And was able to avoid that. And then on Oni, you know, I don't have any huge one moment. I mean, so that 3 was nice and the stroke looked pretty good and he shot it pretty well. What was more is just kind of the overall impact on the game is to me what I think was the part of that that had me most excited. These guys are old. I mean, they're pretty well established. So there shouldn't be a lot of surprises. But Oni hit 174 threes last year, so he certainly understands, you know, can shoot it and do things. I mean, the question on him is whether or not he can be Luke Bamute or something of that nature. He's only 6'4", officially, and so I don't know if that's quite the same. You know, Luke Bamute has a lot bigger body than 6'4". I think he's 6'8", 6'7". And so that's, you know, 230. It's probably Brantley might be a better example of that, but he really looks to be offensive-minded in a different way. All right, those are my thoughts. I don't know next week's schedule. Might depend on news. I'm in San Diego with my daughter for a golf tournament, so I'm going to try to focus on that, and we'll see what I can get out for shows for you the week after that. I'll be a little limited too. So we'll try to get 1 or 2 out each of the next 2 weeks. Hope you're doing great. Thanks very much for tuning in. This has been Locked On Jazz, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Late note for you. When I come back from the break, I will be looking for our new ad schedule for September and October. So if you're interested in advertising on Locked On Jazz, email me at dlock09@gmail.com.